I'm Amber Engelman, your guest host on this evening's Paradigm Shifters. Tonight's guest is typically the host of this long-running show, Veronica Entwistle. Veronica is an intuitive counselor, teacher, radio talk show host, and author of My Near Life Experience. Welcome, Veronica!
Hi, Amber. How fun to have you host. I love it. Thank you.
Thank you for asking. It's my pleasure. As the listeners of this show know, you are a very well-known intuitive, and many people are very excited about your new book, My Near Life Experience. But what I want to ask you straight off the gate is, what does it mean to be a psychic intuitive counselor?
Oh, that's a wonderful question. Actually, what it means is I see things, hear things. I'm given all kinds of other senses to see how people work, why they work, to really, usually it's to help people unravel the mysteries of who they are so they can feel more whole. It's a very exciting thing to do.
And how long have you been doing this for?
Probably 35 years.
Holy smoke.
But you know something, Amber? I was born able to do that, but I, like many of us, I stifled it because, you know, people think you're crazy when you're little and you're seeing things and telling people things and so on. So I had to learn to break out of a lot of numbnesses before I could actually do it.
I want to learn more about that in a minute. But I have a question that I want to start this off with just because I, as a friend of yours, want to know, why did you write your memoirs? What motivated this amazing book that is an exciting read, by the way? I love it.
Thank you. Well, I think there's several motivations. One is I get a lot of answers from my own writing. That sounds narcissistic, but it isn't like that. It's like it seems to come out of my hands. And also, it's a really good way to help people discover their own kind of intuitive self. It's to help people make sense of their own life as well. You know, if you understand somebody else's life, it helps you see your own, doesn't it?
It sure does. And I also like that in the book, you give people practical information on how they can sharpen their intuitive skills with meditation and nutrition and information that I feel like is simple and easy to use, but can profoundly shift them. So I feel like that's what a lot of people have been reflecting back and talking about with the book, that it's helping them tremendously with just being at ease with their lives.
Isn't that wonderful? That makes me feel so useful, Amber, doesn't it you?
Yes. I was curious because I've heard that a lot of intuitive people have had trauma, like electrocution or abuse or near-death experiences. Is that what creates an intuitive, or what is that?
Well, you know, I think what's really funny is a lot of this, first of all, we've heard this cliche, everybody is ultimately intuitive, okay? And my response to that is yes, and everybody can sing. But if you've got, like a really innate sense of like a soul drive where you really want to become something like an intuitive, you know, it's like a gift. Sometimes it takes being cracked open. It takes being kind of traumatized in such a degree that you can't hold together the protective fields that would have kept you from your gift, and you have to open up to it. So a lot of us have had some big traumas. I had trauma as a little kid, and I was widowed later, and it's those kinds of things that really boot up your ability to break, to have a nervous breakthrough, and through that pressure you begin to discover, you know, what's inside of you.
I remember in the book there were specific times that you started to break through and become even more intuitive around your husband's death. I believe you were in your early 30s. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, it was a really, really difficult time for me. It's hard to explain. It's just that when you're small and you have a lot of trauma in your life and you don't resolve it, and then your life falls apart in your early 30s, guess what happens? Is you kind of go a bit crazy, right? And so all of a sudden, after he passed over, I wasn't able, I shouldn't put it that way because that sounds so simple and easy, but I began to see things that were erratic. And when I looked out in the world, I saw great big diamond shapes or great big triangles, and they were kind of an entry or portal into discovering things in many dimensions. And in my state of trauma, I used to take my little native daughter and we would go camping. And staring into the fire at night, I started to, it was funny, it was like a pop. I popped open and I began to see inside of people that we were all spiraling colorful lights. A lot of you listeners are going to know about chakras, and the chakras are the colors of, you know, basically the seven basic colors, the colors of the rainbow. And what I saw were the chakras, but they were spiraling lights carrying information from one chakra to the next, to the next, to the next. And I remember being mesmerized. And since that time, and that was 1976, I've been able to look at individuals, whether they're with me or not, and to look inside them and see those lights spiraling up through them. And it's through those light spiraling, I can see how they're, what would you call it, digesting their information from experiences and using it to become either wiser or stupider or crazier or more of a healer or whatever. Oh. You can see that.
Oh,
you know?
That's interesting.
Yeah, so it's like somebody whacked me over the head. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I didn't realize you could use it to see that people are becoming, I didn't know people got dumber, but I guess they do.
But you know what? When I said that, I was being partly cheeky, but the reality is, if people stop the process, or if people tighten up, or if people just get thick, you know, and people sort of get heavy or depressed and everything kind of grays down, then they're not gleaning from those experiences. Mm-hmm. To be enthusiastic about the wisdom you get from experience is one kind of healthy thing. People who are not healthy might kind of tamp it down like an old pipe tobacco, you know, and stuff it down. And so it looks grayed. So you might see the colors, but they're kind of grayed. You understand? Yeah.
That's to me very, very interesting. The point when you were able to crack open and see other dimensions, because I think that obviously that sets you apart from the majority of the population. But it also made you someone that could become incredibly helpful to people in situations of growth or loss and mourning, or even, you know, with their own health. And I just wanted to have, if you wouldn't mind telling us about when you first saw your ex-husband, or your, well, not ex, but your dead husband, because I think that was also a very significant time for you as well. Maybe it wasn't, but when I read it, it feels like.
You bet it was. And now he was a very sort of vibrant, he was one of the 60s revolution, very brilliant man, very handsome and so on. And when he was dying, and his process of dying took 16 months, it was a very, very traumatic time. And he ran around with other women during that period of time. So I helped nurture him near the end until he died and so on. And then after he died, he came to me saying, hi, and I kept waving my hand at him, like flicking him away, going, you go to the light. You've caused enough trouble. Go on, go to the light. And he fortunately laughed, but he would go away, you know. A couple of years later, when he showed up, I really stopped and I listened and I talked to him, and it was really fun. But here's something funny, Amber, is he couldn't really talk for a while. Anybody who's seen the old movie Ghost, you know that the person on the other side, you know, not that that's the answer, but the person on the other side
right.
can't always physically mobilize everything. And my husband couldn't talk, but he could play charades. So he used to come, and he was always very funny too. So he would come and play charades, and I'd have to guess what he was talking about, which would make me laugh so hard, but also took a little time. You know, I had to say, why don't you go learn to talk? Because it's taking far too long. But that was a couple of years after it crossed over.
Mm-hmm. I guess I didn't realize that. So when you die, you have to learn certain things all over again, or is it?
Well, it's frequencies, you know, and you can mobilize, and you know this because you're a Reiki person. But you learn to mobilize the frequencies. And when you're manifesting, like if you're manifesting a penny or whatever, and you're kind of like bringing it through the ethers, you have to learn to bring that energy together and actually put it into some form. And that's my way of understanding why he couldn't talk for a while, where some people can't do certain things for a while. And they get better at it over time, you know? If they practice,
it's interesting because I don't have much contact with the other side, so I don't know if they're trying to talk to me. They'd probably have to hit me over the head to make a big impact. I guess what I'm interested also in, or not I guess, but I think a lot of people, my misconception until, you know, getting to know you was that if you were a psychic, just whatever was coming your way, you'd have to focus on. So if you went into a house and there was a murder, you would know the murder. And is that true? Or can you decide what you want to be thinking about and what thoughts come into your head?
I think that some people have a real propensity for example, a forensic work, you know, and they really, really mm-hmm. intend and want to learn more and more about the bloodshed and all that stuff. I can't handle that. And so when I walk into a house, for example, and it's got some horrible vibration, I try to, what can I say? It's not that I just want to get away from it, but I'm not good at that kind of thing. I get afraid, I get nervous, I get insecure. And I have found that what doesn't work for me as a personality doesn't really happen to me. You see?
Cool. So are you so you basically are able to decide what you want to see and what you want to feel on the other side?
Yeah. That's exactly it. And I think one of the interesting things is when I was doing the work and I was really understanding subtle energy, and that's the energy fields that were like computers, and these are like programs in our body mind, these energy forms, you see. And I was working with trying to help people and doing a lot of counseling work. I called it energy counseling. It was intuitive and energy counseling. And I did a lot of work with people who had sexual abuse or abuse of all kinds. Sexual abuse particularly is very, very sticky. So energy has like sensing and feeling propensities as well, or properties. And when you move it, people's psychology changes and their emotional nature changes. And sometimes, Amber, this is what's really exciting, their legs might feel better. Their weight would drop off. Their headaches can stop, but not in a minute. It usually took quite a bit of retraining of the way those thick energies were striated or rolling throughout their bodies. It was a lot of work. Mm. So after a while, and I learned, I'm a good learner. I'm one of those people that studies by doing most of the time. And so I learned a lot about the psychology of all that. And then I got like, okay, that's very exhausting. And I'm so grateful to know that it can be moved and people can start having a life. But I said to my guides and angels, I said, oh, heavens, I want to work with people who are kind of lighter and freer, like transformers, people who want to evolve, people who want to ascend, people who want to shift their basic frequency. And that's all I get. From then on, that's really all I get. So I don't go and do the house full of terrible history. I don't do those things because guess what? I'd be part of the problem. You kind of got to know where your strengths are, and then you set yourself up with your guidance to work with you on that level, you see?
Is that so are we talking when you're pulling out energy, because there's a lot in the book about subtle energy, is that what you're talking about?
You bet it is.
You're pulling out their subtle energy? Or
yeah.
Okay.
Those are energies that came from reaction, because you're an energy person first and foremost, and you download it into the physical second. Now, if I'm really angry and I'm shouting at you, you're going to download in your body some really fierce frequencies, aren't you? You know how you get blasted by somebody's energy? It's kind of like that. And abuse is any kind of energy that loads you up so that you can't really get to your own gifts and you can't really get onto your own path. Do you understand that? So these are like heavy pattern energies that run through people's body. And they're, I want to say, everybody at home, they're highly movable. You can pull those out. Mm. You can get them out. But we didn't used to know that, right? We thought that that's just who that person was, right?
I think a lot of people still, and me at times myself, feel trapped in my emotional body and feel like I can't get over something or through something. And it's interesting to hear that you can move whatever it is that's keeping you down, so to speak.
Well, you know, don't you think it gives you more permission to believe that you can move it when you hear all that? That's one of the things I want to help people know.
It certainly gives me hope, and it makes me feel that we're not a product of everything that happened to us or, you know, during our 20, 30 years on the planet, but that we can be brand new every day.
Well, there's a whole other thing. We can be the kind of product that chooses to take those thicker frequencies and transform them, spin them like cotton candy so they become a higher frequency. And then your ability to truly choose who you are and which gifts to bring forward, but also to truly understand other people, is huge. So you see, that's like putting it to use. You're going to become, you're more than even than you are now, a very, very compassionate person. And you're going to have a depth of understanding of people that you're not going to get out of a psychology book, thank you very much. You know, you're going to get out of watching spirally lights at a campfire. You're going to get it that way. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I know that in your book you talk about some of the ways that you're able to move people's subtle energy. And can you describe some of those for our viewers?
Yeah.
Our listeners, actually, viewers, they can see it. Sorry.
Some people who can see, you know what I mean? And we're talking about the intuitive
yes.
here, right? Maybe they could
That's
actually
true.
See us.
That's true.
All of you, raise your hand if you can see me.
There you go. Five people raise their hand out there in America.
Yeah. So one of the exercises that's really fun that people at home can do to feel energy is if you rub your hands, the palms of your hands together, and a lot of you have done this before, where as you pull them apart hand to hand, it's like a taffy pull. You could stretch warm energy from one hand to the other. So both hands are radiant of healing energy. That is healing energy.
I'm rubbing my hands.
And then,
rubbing them together. Do you hear that?
Yep, I do. And then pull them apart slowly and feel how you can stretch that wonderful, warm, sometimes sparkling energy wider and wider.
Mm-hmm.
Now move your hands over parallel to the top of your head so that they're just off your skull a little bit and that they're arched a little bit to kind of be parallel to the shape of your head. And now what you're going to feel there, as you feel, see if you feel some arches of like some neurotransmissional arcing coming off your brain. Can you feel that?
They feel my hair.
Okay.
I feel a little bit.
Okay. Raise your hands just above your hair a little bit so that they don't tickle your palms so much. And if you just raise your hands a little bit higher, just be patient, everybody at home, and just feel your brain patterns arcing off the top of your brain. And trust me.
I feel my hands distinctly.
Yeah. Okay. Now, if you do this, just hold them like that. Sometimes if you're anxious and you do this, the arch of your palms or your hands is going to soften the arches coming off the top of your head and your body's going to calm down. And another way of using that is if you're talking to somebody who's got Alzheimer's or extreme anxiety, and you put your palms just above that person's head, you're going to feel really prickly energy coming off the brain. And it's going to be prickly, like little needles coming up. And if you hold your palms in that kind of curved way, you're going to find those prickles soften, and then the arches there become softer and sweeter and flow under your hands. And that person will literally get calmer. Now, maybe his or her Alzheimer's won't completely be healed, but you'll understand that you can make a healing influence in that moment with that very simplistic, cost you nothing, rub your hands together technique. And it's a very good tool. It's a good tool for testing how a child feels. It's a good tool for testing who's really anxious and who would like to have a little soothing, you know? And when you've got ADD and that sort of thing, it's really, really amazing how it can calm your brain. So that's a small example.
I think that's pretty, it felt good, but I want to know if it will help my CRS, which is my brain disorder.
I think it will if you, and I know that Amber's studying Reiki, so I know that as your awareness of your energy fields gets softer and sweeter, you'll find that you can hold your hands like that and it will really help your brain change, because there's an old line that comes from the Arcturian Chronicles. I love Arcturian beings because I think I'm one at some level. But anyway, they're Chronicles end with change the energy, change the reality. So you can say I have, or somebody, we're talking about somebody with Alzheimer's. If you can keep changing her energy fields or his energy fields over and over again by influencing them with your own, with the energy fields you're bringing through from the universes, who knows? We could possibly, and I haven't spent the time on it, we could possibly change that, the description of that illness, change the energy, change the reality, you know. And you can also rub your hands together like this, Amber, and then you can hold your hands under your chin, and you can definitely give yourself a facelift, which you do not need yet, but you might want one day.
I certainly do. I've got a double chin.
Oh, good. You're just hoarding your chins, collecting them right now.
Yes. I'm hoarding my chin. I'm collecting chins.
That's so cute.
My brain. I'm going to just remind everyone, if you're just joining us now, we are talking to Veronica Entwistle, intuitive counselor and author of my new favorite book. It's called My Near Life Experience. And we are talking about energy work that she does. And I just wanted to ask her another question, continuing on that thread. Does learning about energy work or energy make a difference in how we get along in life?
Oh, my gosh, does it ever. Because literally, change the energy, change the reality. You could go into a room where people are, now I'm talking about when you learn to mobilize energy consciously through yourself as if you're like a little electrode, you can literally draw energy in through the top of your head and have it run down, and you can fill your body and have it come out your hands, and you can send that energy to every corner of the room, and what might have been a hostile environment can literally change. Now, it might be hard for you to change it yourself if you're going into the Pentagon and working with Congress, but you know, it's if enough people did it, it would change it would change the entire political process. I promise you. And you know, we can do so much magic. It's just we don't count on it enough yet. We can do it.
We're going to do another quick energy lesson. I just want to tell anyone that's listening to this while driving, don't try to attempt this while you're driving because it may make you drowsy. But one of the saints and the saints that you've studied taught you about the violet flame. Can you give us some information about that and how the violet flame can work for us?
I love the violet flame. For a lot of you have heard of Saint Germain, I'm sure. He was a living man. He was over in France, and I can't remember his, I think it was like the mid-1800s or something, but he lived for quite a long time, so who knows. But anyway, he taught us all that you can call in from the universes, you can call in the violet flame. So he has these kind of chanty prayers that you can read about. And you call in, and everybody do this with me. It's just really delightful. So you call in the violet flame and bring it in from the universe or the universes, as we like to say. And you call in the violet flame and have it come in through the top of your head. And you say things like this: the violet flame burns and burns through the top of my head, and the violet flame burns and boils through the top of my head. It burns and boils in my head, and the violet flame burns and burns in my neck, and the violet flame burns and burns in my shoulders, and the violet flame burns and burns down my arms and my hands until they radiate the violet flame, and the violet flame moves back up my arms and burns and burns in my chest. It's burning up all the leftover thoughts and feelings, and you have it burning up and burning up in your solar plexus, in your belly area, in the genital area, and then having it burning and burning all the way through your legs, your thighs, your knees, especially anywhere where you're sensitive, and I can feel it pulsing through my body right now, burning and burning in your calves and your feet, burning and burning. And now take that violet flame, and you've got it burning under your feet, and now whirl it round and round and round your body. If you're in your car, hopefully you've pulled over, and have the violet flame fill your car, burning up all the leftover thoughts and feelings, other people's attitude, your own attitudes. Good. Burn and burn and burn, and then wrap your car with the violet flame at your room. Good. And then just keep burning it and burning it. Now, I'll tell you, if you have a room, okay, and you see the violet flame, I like to start a violet flame burning in every corner of the room, okay? And you see these bonfires burning and burning in the corners of the room. And then you have them pick up speed and they start to move in a circle. I always say move to the left. I don't know if it matters. And then they spin round and round and round your room until they meet in the center as a spiral. And the violet flame becomes a big violet bonfire in the center of your room. Good. And then as it fills and burns, you might even warm up. And then as you step out of your room, then you go back, that room is going to feel so darn good. And when people go into a room that has high frequency energy, Amber, in response to your other question, they usually are more harmonious. They usually feel better. Little illnesses and aches and pains go away. Everybody tries to know each other a little better. It's amazingly powerful. I love it. And once again, run it under your chin.
I know. It needs to be lifted up. I just burnt everything in my room. The unfortunate thing is my fire alarms are now going off. I need to stop that.
You can shut them off with your mind, I'm sure.
I was hoping that I'd do that exercise and all the filth on my counter would go away, but it is still there. It did not burn.
But you know what else? They will feel okay. They won't feel as frustrating and as bad.
Okay. Well, I hope that it will feel less dirty, but yes, I think that's a very powerful exercise. You've certainly done that on me before when I've had sessions with you, and I've always felt very soothed by it. It's interesting how we could do it to ourselves, but it's also it feels more powerful when you do that to me. And why is that when you're working on me or other people and we're running the same energy or thinking the same thoughts, when it's coming from you, it actually does feel more like a healing. I do feel shifted. If I feel like I'm getting a cold and I call you and you run energy on me, my cold does go away.
Well, but honey, that's the answer to that is that, and I think people at home might remember this too, that, when a person has practiced doing it for a long time, it gets more and more powerful, right? And also you go into a certain kind of surrender when somebody's working on you, right?
Okay.
I have a daughter who's very beautiful and has been quite strong-willed. And I remember I couldn't get her attention when she was a teenager. She thought I was kind of weird because of all the stuff I did. But I had this wart I had on my cheek that I got when I was pregnant with her. And I had my child in my 40s. So, you know, in any case, I said to her one day when she was being kind of grumpy, I said, "Hey, wait, I'm going to use the violet flame on this wart." And she goes, "Yeah, right. Have fun, Mom." 2 days later, that wart had been stinging and stinging, and then it just fell off, and we've never seen it again. All I did was set up that little violet flame underneath that wart. And, of course, it was a great test case for my doubting Thomas of a daughter, right?
Yeah, that's pretty amazing, actually.
It's a wonderful tool, isn't it?
I know that you've worked with me on that energy before, but I'm going to have to start practicing that at home because it never really occurred to me to do it on my own for who knows what reason, but there you go.
Whenever you have a problem getting along with someone, you know, or difficulty separating yourself from someone or healing a grief, it's a really wonderful thing to do inside of your body, inside your chest. Most of us have a different style of storing our old patterns. So somebody's grief might be in her clavicle and shoulders. Somebody's grief might be down the sternum. Some might be in the belly. Some might be in a combination of places. But when you get your violet flame going, it's not the only style. It's just the one we're talking about today. When you get it going and you get running it in any part of your body that talks to you about the grief, for example, it's just an example, or a rage and anger, you will find you get very good at knowing where you file things, because we all have our style of file, and B, getting it to neutralize a lot faster. I shouldn't have said it that way, because it doesn't neutralize, it transforms to become wisdom. You see, and grief itself is one of the most transformative tools we will use ever as a vibrational being of light. You know, it's
why grief?
Because I think it's one of those things that happens where you go, I have nothing to lose now. I'm now going to write my book. I'm going to dance the dance. I'm going to travel the world over. You know, it becomes an impetus after it becomes a kind of a death, you know, death to rebirth. It's just so extreme and it's so multi-aspected. You know that, right? Other people know that as well. It's a kind of a craziness which gives you enough chaos to rebirth. You understand?
That is very interesting, and considering I have a lot of grief in my life right now, and feeling along with the grief that I don't want to say there's a creativity emerging from the grief, but there's certainly I feel redirected because of the grief.
Well, I think you're right about saying there's a creativity. Yes. It's very creative to say, I have nothing to lose. you know, I'm going to shoot out of a cannon here. Here I go. Well,
I would love to see you shoot out of a cannon.
I think they did it in the Quaker Oats days. Maybe you're too young for that, but they used to shoot the cereal out of a cannon.
I remember that. I am not too young, considering I am officially old, according to something that I read the other day, which was mind-blowing. But anyhow, I digress. I want to talk to you about ghosts. For spirits.
Oh, goody. I love talking about spirits.
And why do they, what are they, first of all? And then why do they come back?
Okay, I think that's, go ahead.
I'll ask the other parts of that question after that. That way I'm not tagging on too many things at once.
Okay, so one of the things about them is there are some. See, when people die, sometimes they don't want to leave this plane. And so you might get people who are sort of stuck and they're roaming around. You don't want to attract those in. It's pretty easy for you to radiate, like, I don't want you here, right? And you can also set up a kind of a connect if you want to. If that's part of your nature, you can set up a connection with them if they're showing up. And you know how they show up. They kind of are these, I call them see-through people or sad-looking characters that hang around. You can set it up so that they are connected with their beings of light, and then they're taken off to the light. You can do that if that's your dharma, if that's something you want to do. In my world, when I started doing readings and ghosts showed up or spirits, I said, go away. I'm an intelligent woman and I am not playing with spooks. Thank you very much. So they came anyway. They came anyway because I'll tell you, some of them in my world, and remember, we all have our own specialties, but the beings that come to me, say you're sitting there having a session beside me, and someone comes from your lineage, someone that's in your, either your history, current history, or long-term history, or whatever, they come in and say, you know, I'm the one who planted man-hating in this thing, or I'm the one who... or it can be simple. It can be saying, like, I hurt your feelings when you were 6 years old. I abused you, and I'm really heartbroken about that. And I want you to know that I love you, and I want to release that. So they'll say that because they want to unhook, and they want you to unhook. So instead of over time, you and he or she keep replaying these weird attachments and making up for something that went wrong, they show me that they are actually unhooking people from those kinds of trials and those, what would we call them, Amber? We call them memories. We call them old programs. And those programs can run right through your whole lineage. So you'll find, like, people who are, I'll go back to the sexual abuse, people who are sexually abused will go off across the world and meet somebody brand new, is entirely different, who you find out is also sexually abused. They go and adopt a child from Timbuktu, and that child's been sexually abused. It's because vibrationally we align with those beings who have the similar things. But you can change that, you see, but we change it by becoming conscious of it and going, oh, like a kid who's been hit a lot will go out, and even as an adult, people will always be slapping at him, even in jest, you know, because it's in his fields, his subtle energy, to have that kind of attraction. So back to spirits, it's been my experience that the ones that come in literally come to do some work with whoever my client is. And it has brought tears to my eyes. It's touched me deeply. You know, it's been absolutely stunning.
Is it? So are spirits, I guess, what are they? I mean, is it like you're dead and then all your memories live on? Or is it, are their memories?
Well, I think this is really a difficult.
Is it their consciousness?
Yeah, it's their consciousness. It's difficult to be absolutely sure what it is. Did you ever see the movie Frequency?
No.
Okay, so this fellow's father dies. He's a fireman, and he dies in a fire. and his son, who's in his 30s, cannot recover from the loss of his father. One day he finds his father's ham radio, you know, one of those old frequency radios, and he learns right. to dial up the frequency where his father is, and then he and his father can now get together. It's a really interesting metaphorical show. It's really worth seeing. And I'm not sure okay. it's quite like that, but it just seems that they come, like, okay, I had a haunted house once years ago, and I had no fear of this ghost that used to walk up and down the stairs at night. And it was his house, and he'd retired there, and then he passed over. And he loved this house. So I didn't mind. He used to be around, and I didn't see him, but doors would open and shut, and I was just quite used to him. And he liked having my family, me and my husband and my daughter. He really liked having us in the house. And then he went nutso when we were moving. We were moving out and taking some of his furniture that I had bought when I bought the house. And he was scratching on walls and trying to get my attention because he did not want us to disrupt the house. But he wasn't a maligning kind of. He was a very benign and kind guy. He just wanted home and family. There's another time I was in another house where the fellow had died, an old man. And one night I was sitting watching TV and this guy comes in, sits down. And I went, oh, my gosh, it's a ghost. And I went, well, you're a psychic, stupid. And I went, oh, yeah, that's right. So I said, I said to him, hi, what would you like? And he said, I just wanted to watch a little TV. So I said, okay. I flicked the channel around and we watched TV together. And then he disappeared again, you know.
Oh, my God. So I guess what you were saying earlier, there's two different types, though. There's the ones that are just hanging around. And then there's your family lineage that can be called for calls of action. Is that correct?
That's right.
If there's one. Okay.
I have can I tell you a little story that's actually in the book?
Yes, absolutely.
My dad's second wife was a Christian Scientist, and she didn't really believe in all this kind of stuff, but she was very spiritual, and I absolutely adored her. And she died when my dad was well up into his 80s. And one time I was at this seminar, big seminar, Lazarus Seminar, he's a channeled entity. And in the middle of the darn it thing, she shows up. And I could see her, and I call her my see-through friends, and I could see right through her. And she said, Ronnie, I said, you better give me a sign because you didn't believe in this. You know, I don't want you to be, give me some shenanigans. And then she said, she, and this is something for people at home to recognize. She revealed to me her body scent. You know how people have a certain scent? It's not a stink, it's a scent, and you just know it's so-and-so.
Yep.
Okay, all of a sudden, in this crowded room, all of a sudden, that's what it smelled like. And she asked me, she said, would you please go phone your father, because he's having a terrible time. I said, oh, heavens, can I wait till coffee break? Because, you know, this is a pretty important time. She said, yes, but please don't take longer than that. So then she told me a whole bunch of things to tell him and so on. So I went tootling over to the hotel and I phoned my dad, and he said, oh, hi. He was an older fellow at this point. He said, hi, I thought you were at a seminar or something. I said, well, yeah, but she just showed up and she said to please call you because you're having a hard time. And he burst into tears. He said, oh, she knows, doesn't she? And he said, it's so hard. So we just chatted a while and passed that message along. And I love that. And it's made me look like an idiot to some people who are a little more doubtful. But it's worth it. It's worth having the egg on the face of being kind of an iconoclast or somebody who shakes up their belief structures and actually making that sort of connection, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, and one other person who I want to speak of came to me fairly often, and he was a frustrating person because he and I were fond of each other, but when it came to somebody else that he loved who used to give me a hard time, he would come and tell me messages for her. And I said, why didn't you help me get along with her? And he said, because I wanted to please her. And I said, well, what about me? And he kind of shrugged. And I said, well, I don't want to carry your messages when you're at the same consciousness level you were on here when you were alive. And I haven't talked to him since. And that sounds mean on my part, but from my perspective, if I want to work with these beings and I want to carry on their neurosis, I'm like, I don't think so. I don't think that's my spiritual pinnacle, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
It does. It's very, very interesting. And I know that you have a little, another lesson that you can give the people, similar to the violet flame, to train them so that they can actually start seeing ghosts, or maybe at least being a little bit more perceptive. Can we do that lesson now? Or
okay, but they have to get off the freeway, and they can't be driving at 90 miles an hour while we do this, right?
Yes, please. If you're driving, this lesson entails closing your eyes. So
Being an intuitive is not for triflers. Oh, I just want to say this. Talking about being on the freeway, you can call in the frequencies, and you can make sure that you have a very large space between you and the guy in front of you and you and the guy behind you. You can make sure you send the amount of energy that makes you feel safe so that you've got that barrier between you and him. It's a little bit like always having a parking space, you know? Mm-hmm. So I thought I'd throw that in. Now, the other thing is, if you want to be able to see things, you know, you've got to get to that part of your brain where the pineal glands are, and right in the sensitive part of your brain. And mm-hmm. one of the ways to do that, and many of you have seen this happen in meditation groups before, where the person who's going to meditate crosses his eyes and points that crossed-eyed connection up to the third eye area. And if you do that for a little while, what happens is you feel really anxious in your brain, right? And
your eyes are closed and then looking up towards
your eyes don't have
third eye, or your eyes are open?
It doesn't matter, but I think you should have them open. But I don't know if it actually matters. But the thing that really matters is that you're stressing them to be pointing them up toward one another, up into your third eye. And the way I was taught is you do that for a while when you're meditating, and then you'll stop because it's uncomfortable. But what it does is it a little like having trauma as a child or whatever, it shakes up the way your frequencies hold themselves together, and it gives you a chance to reformat how they are. Because essentially, your seeing, your third eye, is in a kind of a membrane. You see, it's in a kind of a membrane. It's not really a membrane, it's a vibrational membrane. And that,
okay.
And this kind of distress breaks that and gives you the opportunity to see through. Does that make sense, Amber?
It does. It's certainly uncomfortable.
It's supposed to be.
In Kundalini yoga, we do this, I wouldn't say frequently, but every so often they'll have us meditate on our pineal gland, and it's hard to have your eyes up and in for any length of time, but I think I'll start practicing it so it can... Bring on the dead. Bring on the dead.
Okay, Monty Python. But yeah, but remember, it helps to, when you're uncomfortable, but you know that the discomfort is helping open the passageways, it's a little easier to handle, isn't it?
It's true.
Okay.
It's true.
Aren't we interesting as human beings? Aren't human beings interesting?
We are fascinating to ourselves. That is a true question. So we don't have that much more time, right? We have till
about two or three more minutes. 2 minutes.
So yeah. I want to quickly go over some of the things that you learned as an intuitive or self-taught and that I think that you're really, really strong with and that I've actually recommended people to talk to you is you're really good with health matters.
Ah.
And in particular, nutrition. Let's talk about why nutrition is so important and some of the simple things you can do to help yourself if you're stressed out.
Okay, so one of the simplest things you can do is do protein every, and I mean simple protein like piece of chicken or, not things that are all gouged up with fancy sauces and stuff because those affect your brain. So you can do something every couple of hours, have some protein. It could be peanut butter, it could be peanut butter too, but I would say protein and clear vegetables every couple of hours, you're going to find you are clearer in your mind. It's a little bit like a fast, and you're clearer in your mind, and you can handle your brain a whole lot better. It's really important. I don't think, did I already say this? Whereas if I have chocolate, I mean store-bought chocolate, and coffee at the same time, what happens is my third eye gets painful. And it gets really dark and everything looks really awful. Because if you do allergic things, it really distorts your perceptions. Now, that works whether you're an intuitive or not. But as an intuitive, you realize that what you put in your body is very, very precious because it really primes your sensitivities, you know?
And tell us a little bit about the stomach-brain connection and the reason why. Because it starts in the stomach.
Yeah, your neurotransmissions start off, at least most of them do, start off in your gut first, so which is not something that a lot of us think about. And then in your brain, if the first thing that happens to me, if I look around and I start seeing, oh, everybody looks so-and-so is going to die, blah, 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 and all this stuff is kind of gray, first thing I check is, do I have to poop? Because if you do, it's going to cloud over. It's going to filter everything you see. So it'll give you, it's not just depression. It's like putting a dark something over things. And you'll know what I mean. If you ever get that sensitive to that and you take care of it, you'll go, wow, is that ever remarkable? So you got to make sure you have good elimination. You really have to. Watch for processed foods. Watch for the stuff that they put in to make foods last, that can make a lot of us crazy. It can give kids ADD, can make us nervous. It can give you that kind of road rage, all that sort of stuff. It's really important if you want to be sensitive enough to read into people that you stay away from that stuff. Or if you get onto it, take B vitamin. Take a bunch of vitamin C with bioflavonoid. Take some acidophilus or take some probiotics. You see, you do stuff that cleanses your gut and supports your blood sugar. I was telling Amber earlier, B is for brains, beauty, and booze. Now, you might not be drinking, but you probably have coffee and sugar things and so on. So all of those are lumped under the heading of booze. So if you have something for fun, take your B50 afterwards, especially as you're about to drive home, and it takes care of moods and so on. And if you want to lose weight too, because it really helps you metabolize your food. And I think we're almost going to be over time, but I really love talking to you.
We are.
You're a wonderful host, Amber.
I loved being the host of you. This was a lot of fun.
Well, I hope you'll come back and join us on Paradigm Shifters pretty soon. Amber O'Reilly is a director producer, and tell people what kind of work you've done. You did Naked and Afraid, but you've been wearing clothes every time I've seen you.
Oh yeah, I do work in television and mainly in the action adventure reality space. So a lot of outdoor shows.
Wow.
And Veronica has been instrumental in making sure those shows run smoothly because I will spy on people.
Well, I've really enjoyed this time and thank you everyone for listening to Paradigm Shifters and we'll talk to you very soon. Thank you again, Amber. Big hugs.
Thank you. All right. Bye-bye.
Good night.